The Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back, everyone, to the deep dive. Today, we're getting into a text that really shifts how you think about, well, about almost everything, from markets to ecosystems to, you know, our own brains.
That's right. We're looking at the science of complexity through John H. Holland's foundational work, Complexity, a guided tour.
And it feels incredibly relevant right now.
Absolutely, because Holland offers this this unifying lens. Usually we think an economy works one way, an immune system another, a city its own way, completely separate laws.
Yeah, different fields, different rules.
But Holland says, hold on, these are all basically complex adaptive systems, CAS, he calls them.
Mm.
And they actually share fundamentally a core set of principles.
And we need that kind of thinking today, don't we? We live in this hyper-connected, fast-paced world where, frankly, the old way of thinking, you know, breaking problems down into single causes, it just doesn't cut it anymore.
Exactly. Mm. Reductionism fails us when everything influences everything else.
So things like sudden market crashes or social trends that seem to come out of nowhere, Holland's work gives us a kind of roadmap, a scientific way to understand these unpredictable emergent behaviors.
It really does. And to get it, we should probably start with the man himself, John H. Holland, a truly pioneering American scientist. He wasn't confined to one box. He held professorships across psychology, electrical engineering, and computer science at Michigan.
Wow. Okay. That diverse background already tells you something.
Definitely. And he was a central figure at the Santa Fe Institute, which is, you know, the hub for complexity science.
But what really sets him apart? What gives him that unique authority on this?
Well, his huge contribution, he's widely known as the father of genetic algorithms.
GIs.
Genetic algorithms. Okay.
Yeah. The thing is, he didn't just theorize about how systems adapt. Back in the 60s and 70s, he actually invented a computational method that mimics natural evolution. It uses selection, recombination, basically problem solving like nature does. Ah, so he wasn't just observing complexity, he was building it. He was translating nature's rules into working code.
Precisely. That's the key difference. He was a creator. He understood adaptation from the inside out because he was literally constructing these adaptive systems computationally.
That must give him a perspective that's just fundamentally different, not just top-down theory, but bottom-up creation.
It absolutely does.
Yeah.
He bridged that gap between abstract evolutionary ideas and concrete functioning algorithms. He showed these principles weren't just for biology. They were universal rules for how anything learns and adapts.
Okay, so let's dive into the book itself, Complexity, a guided tour. He wrote it not just for scientists, but for people like us, like you listening, intellectually curious, to kind of pull back the curtain on complexity and show it's not just chaos, it actually has structure.
Mm-hmm. And the core question he's wrestling with is, how do you get these incredibly sophisticated large-scale behaviors, think market dynamics, consciousness, and colonies emerging from systems made up of lots of, well, relatively simple individual agents just following basic rules. Individual traders, single neurons, ants doing their thing.
Yeah.
And his answer is the CAS framework, complex adaptive systems.
And it feels like the big mental shift here is realizing it's not really about how smart or complex the individual parts are. It's about the interactions between them,
yeah.
The network, the connections. That's where the magic happens, right?
That's exactly it. The richness and the structure of those interactions are paramount. It moves us beyond just looking at the nodes.
So how does he start this tour?
Well, he begins by showing why traditional science kind of hits a wall. If you try to analyze these systems with brute force, just calculating every possibility, you immediately face what he calls combinatorial explosion.
Meaning there are just too many possible states, too many connections to track?
Way too many. Exponentially too many. So he uses games as analogies, which work really well.
Oh, okay. Like what?
He starts with checkers. Complex games, sure, but ultimately solvable by computers. Then chess. Much harder. The number of possible game states is astronomical. You can't just search everything.
So you need strategy, pattern recognition, things that emerge from the rules but aren't explicitly in the rules.
Exactly. You rely on these emergent properties to guide you.
Yeah.
But then he gets to go.
Which is famously even more complex than chess.
Orders of magnitude more complex.
Hmm.
And the killer insight with Go is that its behavior is computationally irreducible.
Irreducible. Okay, what does that mean in practice? Like, you can't find a shortcut.
Pretty much. It means there's no simpler model or formula that can predict the outcome of the game faster than just playing the game itself. You have to simulate it step by step to see what happens.
Wow, so the process is the result. You can't jump ahead.
You got it. And that's the nature of so many systems we care about, economies, ecosystems, maybe even social dynamics. You can't perfectly predict the future without actually letting it unfold. Simple rules leading to fundamentally unpredictable outcomes.
That's a huge insight. It really sets the stage for understanding why we need the CAS framework.
It does. So having established that problem, he then starts defining the CAS itself. He outlines 7 key properties, but maybe we can focus on, say, 3 really crucial ones.
Sounds good. What's the first?
The first one is almost deceptively simple: tagging.
Tagging, like labels.
Exactly, like labels. It's how agents in the system could be cells, traders, animals, people, identify each other and decide who to interact with, selectively.
Okay, give me an example.
Think about your immune system. Cells have surface proteins. Those are tags. They tell other immune cells, friend or foe, self or other. Or in an economy, a brand logo is a tag, a uniform, a particular jargon used by a group.
Ah, I see. So organization doesn't have to come from some central controller. It can merge just from these simple local identification rules. This is how groups form online or how specialized cells know their neighbors.
Precisely. Tags create the boundaries, the connections, the flows. They allow for self-organization.
Sure.
Okay, the second key property, non-linearity.
Okay, this is where things get tricky for prediction, right? Non-linearity means the output isn't proportional to the input. The classic butterfly effect.
That's the one. A tiny nudge in one part of the system. One unexpected tweet, one slightly altered protein, one failed bank can cascade and lead to massive system-wide changes. Cause and effect are completely decoupled in terms of scale.
Which makes forecasting incredibly difficult, if not impossible sometimes. If a small change can have a huge, unpredictable effect, how do you plan for anything?
Well, it changes how you plan. Holland's work suggests you stop trying to predict the exact outcome, because you probably can't reliably. Instead, you focus on the system's potential responses and its robustness.
So managing risk rather than predicting specific.
Exactly. You build in buffers, you diversify, you prepare for surprises, because nonlinearity guarantees surprises will happen. You anticipate that small things will have big effects, you just don't know which ones or when.
That makes a lot of sense. Built for resilience, not just for efficiency based on a single predicted future.
Okay.
And the third property.
Diversity. The system needs a wide variety of agents, strategies, and potential solutions.
Like biodiversity in an ecosystem.
Very much like that.
Yeah.
Diversity is the system's insurance policy. If the environment suddenly shifts, a new competitor arrives, a climate changes, a market crashes, the system needs that pre-existing variety to draw upon. Some agents or strategies might fail, but others will be suited to the new conditions.
Whereas if everything is the same, a monoculture, one shock can wipe it all out.
Precisely. Diversity equals resilience. It's crucial for long-term adaptation and survival.
Okay, so we have these CAS properties: tagging, non-linearity, diversity defining the structure. But what's the engine that drives adaptation within that structure? This brings us back to his big invention, right?
Yes, the genetic algorithm, GA. Holland uses the GA not just as a computational tool, but as a powerful metaphor, maybe even the literal mechanism for how adaptation works universally. He's basically saying evolution is a kind of general-purpose problem-solving technique.
How does it work in simple terms?
Well, you start with a population of potential solutions. Think of them like digital chromosomes encoding different approaches to a problem.
Okay, a pool of candidates.
Then you need selection. You evaluate how well each candidate solves the problem. That's its fitness. The fitter ones are more likely to be selected to reproduce.
Survival of the fittest, computationally.
Sort of. But the really clever part, the engine of innovation, is crossover. Or recombination.
That's where the mixing happens.
Exactly. You take 2 successful parent solutions and you swap parts of their code, their genes. You combine pieces that worked well in one parent with pieces that worked well in another. This creates novel offspring solutions.
So it's not just random mutation driving change, although that can play a role too. It's about combining proven successful components, what Holland calls building blocks, in new ways.
That's the fundamental insight. Adaptation, innovation, progress, they don't usually happen through massive random leaps into the unknown. They happen by discovering useful subroutines, useful modules, these building blocks, and then recombining them cleverly.
That completely changes how you think about problem solving or even learning a skill. It's not about inventing the perfect thing from scratch every time.
Right. It's about having a good library of reliable building blocks, concepts, techniques, code snippets, habits, and getting good at mixing and matching them when a new challenge comes along.
It ties back perfectly to that idea of emergence. Complex solutions arise from combining simpler, validated parts.
Absolutely. It's all interconnected.
So, stepping back, what are the big overarching messages or themes you take away from Holland's work? How does it shift our perspective?
I think it offers a really profound shift. Let's maybe highlight three core lessons. First, this idea of emergence. More is different.
We touched on this sophisticated patterns arising from simple local interactions.
Exactly. Consciousness from neurons, flocking birds from simple steering rules, market trends from individual buy-sell decisions. Holland urges you, when you see some complex pattern traffic jams, online fads, whatever, don't look for the mastermind controlling it all. Look for the simple local rules the individual agents are following.
The power is decentralized. Okay, theme two.
Power of simple rules. This is kind of the flip side of emergence. We often think complex systems must have incredibly complicated components or instructions.
Right. You assume complex output requires complex input.
But Holland shows that's often not true. The richness, the adaptability, the complexity that comes from the interactions enabled by simple, clear rules, not from the rules themselves being complicated.
That has huge implications for design, doesn't it? Whether you're designing software or a team structure or even like family routines.
Totally. The message is focus on enabling interactions with simple, clear guidelines. Don't try to micromanage every detail with overly complex mandates. Let the complexity emerge from the bottom up.
Makes sense. And the third theme.
We've hinted at it a lot. The limits of reductionism. You simply cannot fully understand a complex adaptive system by breaking it down into its isolated parts and studying them separately.
Because the essence is the interaction, the network, the flow.
Precisely. Taking the system apart destroys the very thing you're trying to understand. So when you face a systemic problem, a struggling company, a social issue, an ecological crisis, resist that powerful temptation to find one broken part or one person to blame.
Instead, you have to look at the network structure, the feedback loops, the rules governing the interactions.
Yes. The problem is likely embedded in the connections and the flows, not isolated in a single component.
The book itself is also full of these really sticky ideas, phrases that capture these concepts. Maybe we can share a few paraphrased.
Yeah, they really crystallize the thinking. How about this one on emergence? The behavior of the whole system is much more than the sum of the behaviors of its parts, but it is not a miracle.
I like that last part. But it is not a miracle. It emphasizes that emergence isn't magic. It follows principles, even if they're complex and hard to predict precisely. It's understandable, not supernatural.
Exactly. Then there's one about adaptation. Adaptation is not about finding the best solution. It's about finding solutions that are good enough to survive and reproduce.
The idea of satisficing, not optimizing. So systems aren't necessarily aiming for peak performance in one specific scenario. They're aiming for resilience, for being good enough across a range of possible futures.
Right. Optimization often leads to fragility. Being good enough across many conditions is better for long-term survival. An overly optimized system might be perfect for today's conditions, but collapses when things change tomorrow.
That feels very true to life. Okay, one more.
How about this one? Reinforcing the innovation mechanism. Effective adaptation relies on the discovery and recombination of useful building blocks.
Yeah, that innovation is combinatorial. Progress happens by building upon and cleverly combining things that have already proven their worth on a smaller scale. It's Lego, not sculpting from a formless void.
Well put. These aren't just abstract ideas, though. They have very real-world applications.
Okay, let's get practical. How can you use CAS thinking day-to-day or in professional life?
Well, take business and management. Holland's framework strongly suggests moving away from rigid, top-down command and control structures.
Because that stifles adaptation and emergence.
Exactly. Instead, you adopt a CAS perspective. You try to create an environment where diverse teams, the agents, have the autonomy to experiment, to try new things, to interact freely. You foster bottom-up innovation.
Like agile software development, maybe? Small autonomous teams, simple interaction rules, rapid feedback loops, selection based on what works.
That's a perfect example. Agile is fundamentally a CAS approach put into practice in a business context.
Okay, what about something like public policy or city planning?
Same principle applies. Instead of attempting massive, detailed central plans, which are brittle and often fail to account for nonlinear effects, you focus on setting simpler, enabling constraints. things like basic infrastructure access, clear zoning rules, environmental standards.
So you create the conditions and the basic rules, and then you allow desirable organic growth and solutions to emerge from the interactions of citizens and businesses.
Precisely. It's much more aligned with someone like Jane Jacobs and her ideas about what makes cities vibrant and resilient. It's about fostering emergence, not imposing a rigid blueprint.
And maybe even on a personal level, personal development.
Absolutely. Think about learning a complex new skill, playing an instrument, coding, maybe even improving your social skills. You can view your own skill set as a kind of personal CAS.
How so?
Focus first on mastering the fundamental building blocks, the basic chords, the core programming concepts, the simple conversational openers. Get those solid. Then consciously experiment. That's variation. Try combining those blocks in different ways. See what works, what feels effective. That's selection.
So you're essentially running a personal genetic algorithm to build complex competence from simple foundations.
You are. It's an evolutionary approach to skill acquisition and self-improvement. You embrace trial and error, recombination, and selecting what proves effective in your own experience.
That's a really empowering way to think about learning. It's not about instant genius, but about systematically building and combining.
It really is.
Thinking back on our discussion, what surprised me most, I think, was just how fundamental that simple concept of tagging is. The idea that all this incredibly complex organization, whether it's in biology or economics or social groups, ultimately rests on simple local rules of identification, who talks to whom, who belongs where. It seems almost too simple to explain so much.
It's elegantly simple, isn't it? For me, the lasting insight, and what I hope listeners take away, is a kind of informed humility. A healthy skepticism towards easy linear predictions and grand top-down solutions for complex problems.
So instead of trying to precisely control everything,
you learn to nurture systems.
Yes.
You focus on the rules of interaction, on fostering diversity, on creating environments where positive adaptation can emerge. You become more of a gardener than an engineer, in a sense.
I like that analogy. And maybe the final provocative thought is this. The complexity framework really pushes us to change the question we ask when things go wrong, instead of asking who's to blame.
We should be asking, what simple underlying rule or interaction pattern might be driving this undesirable emergent behavior system-wide?
It shifts the focus from individual failure to systemic structure, a much harder but probably much more productive question.
The necessary shift, I think, for navigating the world we live in.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acotra Foundation.